Here's Fox creeping forward. He pulls up, 18-footer. De'Aaron Fox puts the Kings on top. Fakes once, fakes twice. Gives to Belly. 35-foot three for the win. Nemanja Bjelica.
We deserve this win, man.
When we're done, we go chop it up, eat, right. Golf, whatever you want to do. But for these 48 minutes, I ain't about them games.
Welcome back to another episode of the King's Pulse podcast. My name is Brendan Nunez. Got Rich Hibanowski on here as we always do. What's going on, Rich? How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I'm tired. I got my steps in today. How many steps are you like getting in daily?
Oh, man, I don't keep track of this. I'm not sure.
You're an Android guy?
No, like I actually have an Apple Watch. Well, I currently don't know where it is, I will admit, but I never kept track of my steps.
I don't know. I just heard that like you're supposed to do 10,000 a day, which seems high to me. But someone was talking to me about it, and I'm like, now I gotta 1,000. I gotta hit that now.
Oh, so you're saying you hit that today?
No. I'm
okay.
Very close. I'm very close. I've got as close as I've gotten in. So like I looked at it. It's cool because this is not an Apple ad, but it's cool because you can look at it and it, even without you trying to, it'll record your steps from like every day. And I've had this phone for like 18 months. So like, it's so crazy how much they've decreased since the pandemic. Like it's like a third or less.
Yeah. I mean, like what is even a busy day of steps look like? Like you have to go to the grocery or something.
I'm just taking walks. I'm taking 3 walks a day. Today I'm at 9,028 steps. I gotta get out. No.
Okay.
My in-laws who live like a few blocks away has a dog that we often play with and walk. So that's a good idea. It's a good hack right there.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. I got a dog here that definitely gets me out of this chair every once in a while when I get tired of watching random EuroLeague games. Today we are diving into 3 different guys in the 2020 draft. We have Leandro Bolmaro, Desmond Bane, and Isaiah Joe, 2 shooters. And, you know, we'll get into our rankings of them, but the projections I see are late first round, early mid second round, something in that sort of range. So yeah, with Sacramento sitting there 35-43, names to definitely keep an eye on. And I think there's reasons to have interest in at least a few of them here. And if you're all right with it, I say that we start with Bolmaro, since I feel Bane and Joe are a little bit more similar. We can kind of do them side by side.
Yeah, they definitely are. So yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. Let's get right into Leandro Bolmaro, the point forward for Barcelona.
Yeah, and we talked about this a little bit off air. It's kind of tricky to gauge Bolmaro because he's playing in the EuroLeague, like you said, for Barcelona, but he kind of hops between the A team and B team, and obviously very differing numbers there. But yeah, I mean, the numbers I have for the A team in 19-20, over 9 games played, and he's averaging about 26 point, or I'm sorry, I'm looking at the B league there. The numbers I have for the regular league for the A team is 9 games, 12.9 minutes a game. And yeah, I mean, these numbers are small because of the minutes you're talking about, but again, he's playing in a really good league. 5.1 points that you're looking at here, you know, 1.6 assists. I'll point out the 1.2 turnovers as well on 44% from the field, 46% from 3 on very low volume. We'll talk about his 3-point shot, I'm sure. And this has 85% from the free throw line. But like, there's varying numbers between which team he's playing for, which league this team is playing in. You know, there's a stretch of 9 games that he played for the B team where he shot 6 threes a game on 28%. Numbers are kind of all over the place for this guy.
Yeah, they're almost unusable because you mentioned that, but that's 9 games of league play, and he had 9 games in the B league or the second league for Barcelona, and then 6 games in the EuroLeague. So you're only talking about you know, like a third of his games from 2019-20, and he's played eight games in this current season for them as well. So, like, even trying to single out those nine games is like, it almost doesn't matter to me at all.
Yeah. So what is the first thing that stands out to you with Bamara?
Specialness in passing, mm-hmm. and a creative, shifty handle. And like, it's funny because I always go into these and I'm like, I'm going to really try not to like compare him to other European prospects, because I think that's just over relied upon. But then you watch him and it's like, all the comps that come to mind really are, there's a lot of this European crafty finishing.
Yeah.
Crafty driving, special passing that you just get. Like it's, I think it's just a function of the, you know, we've talked about how ball skills are so much more important compared to athleticism and conditioning, which is, you know, I think he is a skinny, you know, kind of light framed dude. It's prototypical of a European prospect, but that's just the way it goes, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's part of the style of play and the talent that they're working with. Like you said, I think that, you know, EuroLeague tends to work with a little bit of lesser level athletes compared to the US, and that means that you're a little more skilled and the game is a bit slower that you're working with there. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned the passing, and at the beginning you called him a point forward. Yeah, the passing that he has for being 6'7", I think is super impressive. And the other thing that really stood out to me with him is I think his on-ball defense being 6'7", and you know, just he's very pesky, which I think you also see with a lot of these European guys. Like on-ball defense, I think, you know, picking guys up full court, you saw him doing often. And you know, you mentioned the playmaking. I thought he was calm and collected most of the time, and also very willing to get creative with it. And I feel like that and the on-ball defense were probably my two favorite things I saw from him.
So that's interesting. I have seen some highlights of him playing well on defense, but his reputation and from the majority of stuff I've read on him from people that have watched like every game of his, which I certainly haven't, is that he's a really poor defender.
So my take was off the ball, he was pretty bad, but on the ball, he was good.
I mean, length can do that for you, right? Like if you're 6'7" with a slightly plus wingspan, and you're kind of have the craft or like the imagination and the IQ that he does, the feel for the game, like I think he's okay, but I don't want to really have him use that in the NBA because of the strength factor. Like I don't project him to be a good NBA defender just because he's kind of long and crafty. I would have real concerns, because especially if he's a point forward, he's just going to get bodied by, you know, other forwards, like NBA physical forwards.
Right. And he's probably too slow laterally to stay in front of ones at the NBA level. I think he could find a sweet spot with some twos, or just bothering some of these wing initiators if he's able to get into the ball. And I think that he can be somewhat impactful there. But yeah, there is concerns with that translating. I mean, you mentioned him also being a little more thin, and I think that that'll lead to some issues there as well. And he's tall, but I didn't see an exact wingspan for him, but I saw people noting that they felt like it was a poor wingspan that he was working with. And then also on the defensive end, while he does have a good feel, and I would say that he has a high IQ, he did tend to gamble a bit much. I'm kind of still up in the air on how I feel about him on the defensive end in regards to translating to the NBA, but I think that there is potential there with the size that you're working with and his understanding.
I think there's potential, but as far as projecting like a median outcome, I'm not excited about him defensively. I'm not like putting that in the strength category for him personally. But I do want to get back quickly to the playmaking. So I wanted to ask you, do you see him as a guy that could play point guard?
So I kind of think he has to. Like, I don't really like him off of the ball that much. We'll get to his shot that was underwhelming. But, like, I think he kind of needs to be initiating the offense. And I think that's a little bit of the issue with him. I think he can do it at an okay level, but like, yeah, like a bench initiator that I guess, you know, is your primary guy. Like, is it fair to say almost like a, you know, B level, C level bogey sort of thing?
Maybe, but I want to set you up with my part two of that question, which is so he's a 6'7" primary playmaker potentially. How does he stack up with all the other 6'7" primary playmakers in this draft? Because there's a lot like these, you know, not exactly 6'7", but these bigger point guards: LaMelo Ball, Killian Hayes, Tyrese Haliburton, Théo Maledon as well. Like, where does his passing rank among these guys for you?
Well, I think that his passing, well, it's clearly below the likes of LaMelo and Haliburton. And then when you get to Hayes and I forget the Maledon, the issue is that he doesn't have the scoring prowess to me that allows his passing to, or allows him more passing opportunities. I think that, you know, teams will be more of a, I'd rather let Balmero attempt to sort of get to the rim than help off this guy in the corner, when that's not quite the case with some of these other guys.
Yeah. And I could see that as well. Like, where he's a point, he might end up as a point guard, but that's probably a bad thing. Ideally, you want him to end up as a forward. You want him to end up as a 3-4. Because he maintains that passing, but then he adds strength and he adds shooting, like spot up shooting off the ball offense. So then that's the best of both worlds for him. Like, if he ends up a point guard, it's a bad thing for him.
Right. I think so. And I'll say that he was turnover prone as well. I have 1.75 turnovers compared to 2.5 assists during his 24 games in total between the leagues last season. And, you know, part of that is just, you know, getting a little ballsy with it at times. And I think that, you know, just being a young player, a lot of these guys that you've mentioned before have some poor turnover numbers, but for a guy that, you know, that's probably his primary skill, it's definitely concerning.
Yeah. So we mentioned the shooting. You know, I think the season you chose to read off some of the numbers for was actually his best shooting performance by a long shot. I will mention that in the 8 games he has played in this current season for Barcelona, yes, like they're actually having a season there in Spain, he's shooting 19% from the field.
Oof.
You know what? Maybe that's gone down since I last looked. I think it's, 19% from the field. That's not great. 10% from three. You know, didn't make a three in the EuroLeague, but I think he took like whatever 4 shots. So it's not it's just this sample is so strange. It's like a little bit more clear than Poku. You definitely have him playing at higher levels than Poku, but I don't like feel good about the sample. One thing I can note is that in his international career, he's shooting like right about 70% on free throws, a little bit less than that. How serious are the concerns of the shot? Like, I know, you know, again, I'm going to lean on another international here, but Denny Avdija comes to mind quite a bit when you look at free throw struggles of a guy that like you're trying to pin down. Is this a serious concern, or is there projectability? Are you expecting a lot of growth here?
No, I mean, so when he played for the B team, he put up 6 threes a game and hit like 28% of them. And I guess that shows some promise, like slash willingness, but I don't feel good saying Balmero is going to be a shooter at all. Like, I think that, he looked a little more comfortable off the dribble than off the catch, but like, I think that my concern with him, like, is that, again, he's really just a playmaker to me right now. And I think, in regards to the offensive end. So if there's no shot for him, like, I think that the playmaking just gets so nullified. And yeah, I don't have confidence in it, to answer your question. And I think that's going to be a lot of the issues with him.
Remind me of your feeling on Denny Avdija as a shooter.
I think that I feel a bit better about it in regards to the form that he was working with. And, you know, maybe I'm getting a little caught up in some of the workout videos that we've seen consistently pushed out from him, probably just because he's a top prospect. I feel better with Denny. And obviously Denny has more that he's working with aside from the shot.
Better. So like that's just where but that's more, I'm just trying to make that backdoor point on why we should have more doubt in Avdija's shot rather than telling you like, okay,
yeah,
you need to believe in Balmaro. But let me ask you, I'm getting off to another tangent here, but on Twitter, like, you know, you said you don't think it's crazy that Marvin Bagley could become a shooter. Like, why could Marvin Bagley become a good shooter if Leandro Balmaro can't?
Well, I guess I think that Balmaro can, but like Bagley is a pretty good mid-range shooter, you know, and I think that he has like a silky smooth form to him. Like, I don't think he has a little bit like too much bounce in his feet and things like that. But I think that Bagley, like, you've seen the potential in the mid range and the idea is, okay, just step that back a little bit.
Yeah, no, I don't agree. I would take Balmaro being a better shooter than Bagley, no doubt. And I'm not even like sold on Balmaro being a good shooter. I just think there's a point where it's like, we have to at some point say not everyone can be a great shooter. Because yeah. If we say like that this prospect who's been in the league, the NBA for 2 years, hasn't done this yet, but he can still do it, then anyone can do it. Like, I mean, how long does it take? Like, can Alex Len be a good shooter? I mean, he shot 36% on 2.6 attempts per game from three in a year. Like, okay, so everyone can shoot. You know what I mean? We have to draw a reasonable line at some point.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. In the Bagley conversation a little bit, it's just I feel like he can get to a point where people have to close out at the three-point line, and that in itself will open up him driving. But I see where you're coming from, and I probably tend to, you know, guys that I like the rest of their game, talk myself into their jumper if it's a little sketchy at times.
Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that means hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. And right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Try out Indeed with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th.
Anyway, so long story short for Balmaro, I think that he has the potential. Like, I'm not banking on it. I'm building in just a ton of risk, just like an incredible amount of risk that he just isn't a quality shooter. And, you know, he can work on it, but it's calculated. Like, you have to, if you're taking him in the first round, you have to understand there's extremely high bust potential, because if you got a point guard that can't shoot it and, like, honestly isn't an amazing fundamental passer. He has incredible flashes, but, you know, I don't think there's almost no floor on this guy at all.
Yeah. And I don't think that he's a first round guy, like maybe a little later. I think that the reason Balmaro would be a first rounder is a team like Boston has three first rounders. They can't keep all of these picks. Like, he's a draft and stash candidate, and then that you just kind of like watch the shot that's probably the swing factor, you know. And I think that same logic can kind of be for 35 for Sacramento.
Yeah, see, that's really interesting, because even though I'm you know, I'm saying he's got no floor, I'm nitpicking him to be sure. I have him really high on my board. I have him really high on my board. Like, I have him, he's going to be a first rounder on my board 100%. And it's not going to really be close. I will mention that James Hamm, you know, threw him out there as a pick that the Kings could be considering at 12. So
yeah, Nate would hate us or hate me.
What do you, I mean, oh, he'd hate you for saying not.
Yeah. He was a big Balmaro guy, right?
I think so. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of big Balmaro guys. And I kind of get it. So, I mean, I'll spill the lead here. I've got him 23 on my board. And okay. I would totally flirt with him at 22 or 21.
Wow. Okay.
Maybe 20. He's not getting higher than that. But he's, to me, he's in this group of like high ceiling, super low floor creator types. Your Teo Maledon, RJ Hampton, Nico Mannion types.
Okay. Yeah. I was wondering, like, when you're, because I kind of feel like you almost compare him to, while he obviously has a size difference to them, like I view him as an initiator. Like, so you have him higher than, say, like a Trey Jones, Grant Riddler, all these like point guards that we kind of lumped into potential 35s for Sacramento.
I do, because I've kind of come around, you know, what PD Webb was preaching on the podcast and what I think you've been preaching a bit as well, is just in the first round, upside really matters more than any amount of safety. So,
yeah,
you know, if it turns out that Nico Mannion is the kid that, you know, scored 30 points at the Nike Hoops Elite, Nike Hoops Summit, and he, you know, that the Arizona year was a bit of a fluke. You know, if you look at a guy like RJ Hampton, it's like, what do we even make of this New Zealand year?
Right.
You know, and Teo Maledon, like this group of guys, I would take 20 to 23. Because in that range, you're kind of a team. You're probably, I mean, I forget the teams that, you know, maybe it's like a, there's like Bucks pick in there.
I have from 20 to 23, Miami, Philadelphia, Denver, Utah. And then, yeah, there's Bucks, OKC, Boston.
Perfect. All those teams.
27 for New York, I think makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I mean, specifically those first like handful of teams, it, like, perfect. Take a swing on one of those guys. And if you bust out, like, it's not that big of a deal. You can waste a early 20s pick on upside. I think that's okay, because if you hit, you really can hit, and it would be monumental.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I definitely find myself valuing upside when you're talking lottery, even a little bit outside of it. But yeah, I tended to find myself, like, especially when I'm, you know, kind of doing hypothetical mocks, like end of the first round, valuing guys that I feel like could contribute pretty quickly, because obviously, I mean, these are like championship contender teams for the most part, but I see where you're coming from, because when are you going to get another shot at an upside guy like this from a team in that position? I probably got to rethink a little bit of my philosophy here. I see where you're coming from. So, but yeah, I mean, obviously he's on the board at 35 with what you're saying. You're very interested in Sacramento, for Sacramento.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, there's a chance. I mean, I don't even think there's a big chance he's there at 35.
Mm-hmm.
But if he or Maledon are there, I'm taking them for sure.
Yeah. Which one do you like better?
Or, I'm sorry, did I say Maledon? I think he's gone by that point. Him or Mannion.
Okay.
Feel like they could slip.
Yeah. I would be very interested in Balmaro at 35. And again, like, I think that, you know, Sacramento obviously could benefit from a stash guy as well a little bit there, with their situation going on. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think that the upside is there, and obviously worried about the low end outcome for him. But yeah, I mean, definitely good measurements that he's working with. Hopefully he can put on a little bit of weight there and develop that jumper that I think is the swing scale for him.
Yeah. I have another player we did today just below him, like only a few spots below him, right below that group of kind of raw playmakers. Let's get to him now. I mean, I'm sure you know who I'm talking about here.
Desmond Bane.
Yeah, it's not Isaiah Joe. Like Isaiah, I like him, but I like Desmond Bane a lot more. He is a senior. He's going to be the second senior that we have in our first round. I think we both have two seniors in our first round.
Grant Riller, is that right?
Yeah, and I have them like straight up back to back. Like I have them 24-25 right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally get it if you're a team that, like, say you are the Bucks and you're like, you know what? I'm not going to take the home run swing. I want a guy right now because I'm afraid we're going to lose Giannis. Totally get it, going for Riller or Bane here. So Bane, 6'5" shooting guard. I feel pretty secure in calling him that. There's not like some wishy-washiness on position like there is with Balmaro, which is, you know, wishy-washiness with position is a good thing these days. But 6'5", 215, and I've seen his wingspan listed differently different places.
About a negative wingspan.
Heard a lot about it, and you can see it, man. Sam Vecini, who we really trust on this show to give accurate measurements, has him at 6'5", wingspan as well, which isn't a good thing. But I've also seen it as less than his height. And if that's the case, that's a huge, huge, huge red flag. Do you think that, I actually have a list of every player to ever make the NBA with a negative wingspan. I have to look it up real quick to find it, but just what do you think about his wingspan? Just like kind of eye test wise, do you see it?
Yeah, you definitely do. I think that one of the places you see it the most is him closing out. I think that, you know, people don't feel the same pressure from him because those couple inches do make a big difference there. And yeah, I think that he already isn't the best lateral speed guy. So he struggles to contain some quicker guards at times. And I will also say, like, you somehow glossed over that he's like one of the buffest dudes in the draft. This man is jacked. I have 215.
Oh, he's 6'6". Absolutely yoked.
Yeah, he's ridiculous. I think I remember a tweet from you forever ago that you don't want Bane on the Kings because you don't want to have to stand next to that guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a joke, but like I was saying, like, my initial analysis on him is that he's too strong. He's too jacked. Like, I like genuinely, I'm like, you might be too jacked to be like amazing at basketball. You need like a little more fluidity.
So, but he actually was like surprisingly fluid. No,
he was. No, he was. That was just like, I'm like, I was saying, like, my first take based on this Instagram post is like, you're too like, you know, the guys that are like in the gym, like they're like, their back muscles are too big to where their arms can't like hang alongside their body.
Yeah. And you just want that guy to shoot every time.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Usually.
I mean, sure. Like, speaking of, can you get into the shooting numbers real quick while I'm digging up this wingspan?
Yeah. And Bane, like you said, 4 years and every single year, a great three-point shooter. Over the 4 years that he spent at TCU, he shot 43% from three on a total of 575 attempts. In his senior season, it was 44.2% from three on 6.5 attempts a game. And he's got a little bit of like a unorthodox form he's working with. When I first saw it, like, if somebody didn't tell me that this guy was a good three-point shooter or like an elite three-point shooter and I just saw his form, I wouldn't buy it. And there's no way I would have thought that this guy could shoot off movement the way that he does with his form.
Yeah, I mean, people are calling him the best shooter in the draft. And yeah, I mean, is that...
I think he's up there. Like, it's, yeah. I mean, I think that like Joe's a little bit in the conversation that we'll talk about, and then Neesmith as well, right?
Yeah, it's, I think the sample size is really attractive when you look at four straight years of just knockdown shooting. It's hard to deny. Look, I've been scrolling through this group chat trying to find this damn list for so long here. I'm going to have to give up on it shortly, but let me put it this way. Like, the list of players ever in the history of the NBA, you know, since they started measuring wingspan in the combine, it's like, it's incredibly, incredibly poor. It's Kelly Olynyk, the only players that I ever heard of. A lot of guys that I never heard of that totally busted out. The only guys I'd heard of were Kelly Olynyk, Tyler Hero, and JJ Redick. And that was it. Like, that's completely the list.
Wow. Yeah, and I do
this is like almost me basing this off of like 2K when you make a player, when you shorten their wingspan and they become better shooters. But like, I think there's something to that. Like every guy you mentioned is a really good shooter. I mean, every guy, like, I mean, it was only three people.
No, no, that's a good point. Like, and I think a lot of them were drafted. A lot of the busts were drafted based on shooting as well. I think there was one other guy. I want to say it was a Plumlee brother, but that was only like a quarter of an inch. Yeah, I mean, it's the short arm can cause a, or can help for a quick release. But it also really, really hurts you as a finisher. And I'll point out that Bane, I think he had like something absurd, like 200 spot up attempts or something like that versus 20 attempts at the basket. And yeah, I mean, I think that is a mild concern here. Although when he got there, like the touch was relatively soft. Do you think he can finish in the NBA?
I think that the way that you're going to see him finish in the NBA is when teams try to face guard him and deny his three-point shot. And I think that he was a pretty good cutter. And I think that that's when you're going to see him finish. And in transition, where I think that he is a little bit of an underrated athlete in regards to the bounce that he has. But I think that, yeah, I mean, I don't think he's doing it off the dribble or anything like that. I think his finishes are going to be because they're overplaying him, respecting the three-point shot.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't like the bounce. I wasn't impressed with the bounce, really. Like, I mean, it's fine, but I think some of it is the just like a small dude type of guy. Like, he's a great athlete.
I think he's average there. I just think that like people have kind of, I've seen him get talked down a little bit there. I think he's just average.
Totally fine with that. Totally agree with that. I mean, I think he's got a very, you know, I watched an interview with him. You must love this guy. Do you love this guy?
I love this guy.
Okay. It's all he does is refer to himself as a junkyard dog. Like that's his whole thing. You know, he compares himself to Marcus Smart, like, you know, in the first question of this interview.
What interview is this?
This was his media availability in the combine.
He had a really good interview with Sam Vecenie on the Game Theory podcast, too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's super well-spoken, I will say. He's
a really smart guy.
Yeah.
Super high IQ, and it shows on the court. Like, it's on court, off court, super smart guy. You know, I mean, I'm tempted to say him and Riller, they're these four-year seniors that are just like kind of the complete package.
Like, yeah.
They're kind of the complete package. The only downside is that they're not elite athletes and they're older. And I mean, I think the athleticism / measurables is what kept them from getting drafted earlier in their college careers. But, you know, notable to me is that Bane is not this crazy outlier age like Riller. Riller is going to be the oldest guy in this draft. Maybe there's some second rounder I don't know about yet, like a Sam Merrill, but like Riller is mighty old. He's like going to be almost 24 by the time the season starts. Like, he might be 24, depending on when the season actually starts. He could be 24 on opening day. Bane won't be 23 until like the middle of the season, at least. So
yeah,
and significant.
Right. And those are going to be your high floor, low ceiling guys. And I think that Bane very much fits that. I'll say that I was surprised to feel that like Bane actually did pretty good when people were closing out. Like, I thought that, you know, he was able to take a dribble or two and even playmake a little bit at times. Like, I think he could be a tertiary playmaker in the NBA. You don't want to do it too often. Like, I don't think the handle's amazing or anything like that, but I don't hate him putting the ball on the deck like every single time he does. And I also think that there were moments of even like step back threes he was doing. Like, he did it okay off the dribble. And I was a little bit surprised to have seen that.
Yeah. I don't think there's a real area of his game where he's going to hurt you. Like, he can move the ball. He can create for himself. I don't think those are strengths by any means, but I'm just not even sure, you know, other than the physical profile and the age, I'm not sure that he has a weakness.
So this is where like this is kind of like my swing for Bane is like, how much does this wingspan matter in regards to defending up? Because with how strong he is, like, I think physically, in regards to strength, like he can handle fours in the league, but is the wingspan stopping him from doing that, do you think?
Yeah. What? Fours?
Yeah.
Yeah, he just gets shot over every single time. He got a 6'5" wingspan. He's guarding, he can't guard threes, man.
You don't think he can guard threes? I think he can
absolutely
guard threes.
Not. He absolutely cannot guard threes. Nope. Nope. He's guarding ones and twos. He compared himself to Marcus Smart. I get it. If like he's switched on to them, I think he can like use his IQ and his fight to like bail himself and his team out for, you know, for a second. But you like absolutely, you do not want him on a four. That's a disaster.
Interesting. Interesting. I actually think that like with the strength that he has and the, like, I don't think that he has like an impressive lateral quickness, but I thought it was fine. And I guess it probably does need to be better with that negative wingspan, but like, I really do think you can get away with minutes of him guarding fours.
I think you're out of your mind. Like the average four has a 7-foot wingspan. And when you shoot the ball, you jump. So yeah, like he's going to like the average four is going to shoot 2 feet clear above him. No way.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. Like, I just don't know. Is every four a guy that's just like rising over the defender?
Yeah. Yeah. In the modern NBA, they absolutely are. Like, how many fours are there in the league they can't shoot anymore? It's basically no one. Like, fours right now are like Kawhi Leonard, man. Like, Paul George, LeBron James. Like,
well, yeah, but you're naming superstars right now. Like,
I'm naming like the prototype of a four right now. Okay, look at the fours in this draft for a second. What four in this draft can't shoot over a 6'5" guy that's got to keep his, you know, feet planted so he doesn't foul? None. I mean, there's none.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I think I'm kind of going to stick to this. Like, I think that with the strength that he has, and I think that he's a really smart player on the defensive end, that like he's going to be – I think he could be fairly successful in a team that switches pretty often.
It's not just shooting either. You can pass over him as well. I mean, it's like what you're saying, like where does the strength, I understand like fighting through screens and all that with your strength, but like what you like, are you talking about like post-ups? That doesn't even like, that's not even really happening in the NBA more than,
well, no, like, so where is the, like, what, you're shooting over him at the 3-point line? Because like, I don't think that you're getting like inside, like great positioning on him necessarily. And I think that if he's guarding a four, the four is not going to have like a great first step on him to blow past him necessarily.
Yeah. You wouldn't blow past him. You'd shoot over the guy that's, you got a mouse in the house, or you got a guy that's, you know,
but are you even, is it a mouse in the house when the dude's freaking 215? Like, are you getting low post position on this guy?
Yeah, you absolutely are. Like, I don't understand what you're saying. This isn't the 1980s. It's not muscle versus muscle for position near the basket. Like, so say you're a four and Bane is guarding you, you cut to the basket. Maybe, you know, I'm not saying you need to get the pass every time, but you're trying to cut to the basket. Your arms are much higher, longer. He's not directly on you. You know, you sail a ball high, you throw an alley-oop, you know, you try to, or you can reset. You can give it to the four, let him look over Bane because his eyes are significantly higher than where Bane's at. He can hold the ball above him. Make a simple pass or make a nice read. Say like it's even Denny Avdija, who's like not got a great wingspan. I still think he's easily operating around Bane. Say it's another four, like a Josh McDaniel. I mean, sorry, a Jaden McDaniels. Like he just pulls up and shoots with that big old wingspan. Listen, you're just, I'm not going to entertain this with you. Like a 6'5" guy, like he's saying he's Marcus Smart. Do you want Marcus Smart guarding fours?
I think Marcus Smart guards fives at times.
And do you want that? Is that ideal? Like, are you saying like,
I don't think it's not a primary assignment, but I think he can switch on to them and get away with it just fine.
So Bane at his absolute, it's not just fine. You're saying Bane at his absolute season, absolute ceiling is what? Like almost Marcus Smart? So you're saying like in an absolute perfect scenario, then he's like almost getting to a situation where it's basically okay.
I don't know about like the, I don't know about the Marcus Smart. Like, I don't think he's some crazy level defender, but I think that he does have this good IQ and again, the strength to go with it. And obviously it's a little bit of an underwhelming wingspan that he's working with, but I think that, you know, nobody's going to bully him off of his spot, and he's smart enough to deny them from getting to those optimal positions where he's going to get taken advantage of. And like, you do see guys that are smaller able to deal with, yeah, like if you, like you're mentioning a Marcus Smart, like Marcus Smart is guarding fours.
I mean, like, is he guarding fours intentionally, or is it
that... Well, it's just like a switch everything system.
Sure. And what I'm saying is that, like, he's the, you know, first of all, his wingspan is 6'9". So he's already got, you know, a 4 to 5 inch advantage on Bane. So we're like not, he's not Marcus Smart. He's going to be like 75% of Marcus Smart with less.
He's not, I don't think Bane's guarding ones. I think likely
he's 100% guarding.
I think he can guard 2 to 4s. And this is like high end outcome, but I think he can guard 2 to 4s.
You're completely out of your mind. He's guarding guards. He's guarding ones and twos. You're out of your mind if you think it's anything other than that. Anyway, let's move on.
All right. So this is, yeah. All right. I'm going to have to work through this big board because I think I'm going to get spicy with Bane at some point. So yeah. I mean, what else do we need to touch on with this guy?
We don't need to touch on anything more than Bane. I'll just say, like, this is the one thing that stood out to me on the age. So he's a 4-year senior. But I just wanted to really drive the point home that he's not Grant Riller. Like, he's actually younger than Obi Toppin. And he's actually younger than, this surprised me, he's younger than Tyler Bay.
Wow.
Tyler Bay is hella old. I don't know how he got so old for his, like, for where he's, we feel like he's a young, raw guy. He's older than Desmond Bane. So I'll just throw that out there. Like, as far as is just really looking at the actual, like, so he's played 4 years. That's not super common that a 4-year senior is going to get drafted super high. I actually looked at that as well. We've had 3 seniors drafted in each of the last couple of drafts in the first round. Very rarely in the lottery, the only one was Cam Johnson. So it's like, you know, it happens. Two to three guys, like we have Grant Riller and Desmond Bane kind of in this range, maybe another one near the bottom of the first round. That feels about right. But I think that does eliminate him from like any kind of lottery discussion.
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball and basketball is finally kicking off this week, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and 7-time NBA champion, we'll go with 6-time NBA champion, Robert Horry. See what they had to say and what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.
Aside from size, which obviously is a big deal, what is like the main difference between Bane and Aaron Nesmith, Sadiq Bey?
Between Aaron Nesmith, I mean, like, yeah, like,
well, say Bane and Sadiq Bey.
Okay, so like size does matter. I mean, we're
right,
talking
about, yeah, it does.
Like 5-6 inches, 4 or 5-6 inches, depending on height or wingspan. Yeah, I mean, that's the number one thing. Like, I can absolutely see them being, they're both very well-rounded players, right? They just play different positions. Another thing to mention here is, so Sadiq Bey, you know, believe it or not, he feels like a super old guy. He is younger. They're definitely both high IQ guys. I think that Bey becomes instantly more switchable because he is that 6'8 guy.
Yeah.
Like, I think I'd much rather see him 2 to 5 than you know, Bane one right. through four or whatever, that type of thing. I also think that there's something to be said for the program, like Villanova, Jay Wright's system, like it just produces high level NBA ready role players. And like TCU, I don't think that they have that reputation. I think there is another point of this is like Bay has been like pretty consistently valued as a prospect. And he's played on big stages where Bane is coming from, like he graduated from a high school class that had 20 kids, 20 seniors in his high school.
Yeah.
Like he's stepped up. He took a very big step from his high school to TCU and he adjusted well, but like we're asking him to take another really big step up in competition to the NBA. I'm not like convinced that's going to go amazingly well.
I like Bay better, not by like a crazy amount. I'm not confident in saying that like Neesmith's 100% the better player than Bane.
Oh, you mean Bane is 100?
I think that Bane could end up a better player. I could be better than Aaron Neesmith. I think I'm going to end up having them really close.
All right, you said Neesmith and Bay.
Sorry. I think that Desmond Bane is going to be very close to Aaron Neesmith on my big board.
Yeah, I think that's understandable.
Neesmith obviously has like the better wingspan, but Bane, I thought, showed a lot more defensively. And Bane like has more to his offensive game than just the shot. And he did it for 4 years.
That's totally understandable. I won't fault you for that take. I think that you're probably forgetting like the number one thing about basketball, which is that size matters. Like, I think you're forgetting the fact that like it's a huge, huge, huge part of the sport. And it's like the reason why you can count the number of NBA basketball players that have been 5 foot something, you know, less than 6 feet tall.
Right.
On one hand, there's a reason for that. There's a reason that we love Poku. There's a reason you have him like in your lottery and I snuck him in there myself recently. There's a reason, and it's size. When I look at a guy like Aaron Neesmith with a 6'10 wingspan and he shot over 50% from three, yeah, there's a much, much higher ceiling than the four-year senior who has done similar things in terms of production, but has a negative wingspan, and only like three guys ever have succeeded in the NBA like that.
Yeah, fair enough. I think at some point we're gonna come with, or at least I have to sort out my big board, and then we'll come back with some more. I'll come back with some more concrete takes here. Are you ready to move on to the other shooter we have here, which is Arkansas's Isaiah Joe?
Yeah. I really like Isaiah Joe. I'm just going to start off right here. First of all, just going to point out the similarity to Bane. I think they're both stuck at shooting guard. I think that's their position. I don't think it's really up for debate. Whereas, like, actually, not a lot of guys are totally locked in as shooting guards, even in the entire NBA. Like, it's kind of like a more fluid position. Isaiah Joe, he's a shooting guard. Anyway, and I'll start right here and hand it over to you. It's Trae Young volume and percentage. That's the thing that jumped out to me. Over 10 attempts a game from three, hit about 35-36%. That's exactly what Trae Young did.
Yeah, in his freshman season, he shot 8 of them and knocked down 41%, 8 of them a game. And yeah, the jump in his free throw percentage from freshman to sophomore season, 75% at the free throw line his freshman season, 89%, in his sophomore season. I mean, and even with just when you look at the form, like Isaiah Joe is right up there with Bane and Neesmith in regards to the best shooter that you're talking in this class. I think that he probably felt like the smoothest at times. When it came to that as well, he's 6'5" and he has a 6'10" wingspan, is what I saw. I didn't see that, from Vecini. Vecini didn't have it listed, so it might be a little bit off there, but 6'10" was what I saw there. And yeah, I mean, pulling down 16.9 points on the year, and there's not much playmaking you're getting from him. I will say, like, I thought that he did a good job jumping in passing lanes, and some off-ball defense, but being only 180, again, compared to Bane's, like, what was it, 215 that we're working with, Isaiah Joe definitely is going to be needing to put on some weight, and I think that's why he's probably, like, right now, you know, just guarding twos. If he even is like successfully guarding twos.
Yeah. And I'm going to cast some doubt on that 6'10 wingspan. I think that if you have that much of a plus wingspan, it gets out there pretty quickly in some official measurements. And just like the whole, like, I think the sites that I've seen list him at a 6'10 wingspan also listed Halliburton at a 7-foot wingspan. And then we found out it's actually 5 inches shorter than that. So I'm just going to, like, in my mind, based on nothing, kind of pencil him in at like 6'7", 6'8".
Wingspan. Yeah, it's definitely a positive wingspan. But I see where you're coming from there. And I think that it benefits him again, like jumping in passing lanes, where I thought that he was fairly smart. And yeah, obviously the shooting numbers that you're working for him are ridiculous, but then you look at the field goal percentage and freshman year, 41%, sophomore year, 36% from the field. And part of this is the slenderness that he's working with and not having a great first step. Like, he had some okay shooting off attacking a closeout, or again, like maybe some sidestep or step back to shoot a three that you kind of saw similarly to Bane, but there's no getting to the rim with Isaiah Joe. You know, he's just going to get dislodged, or he didn't throw up many of them, but you know, these slender guys like throw up floaters because they're just simply not looking to take that contact. I think that's a part of the weight is, you know, what is limiting him to being like primarily just a 3-point shooter when it comes to the offensive end.
You know, what's interesting is like the 37% field goal percentage didn't bother me at all because it's all threes. Like, you know, right. I mean, you look at his 2% shots, it's 45%, but like you say, not taking many twos. It's pretty much open drives. Like, if he gets an open look at the basket, that's what he's taking. And you know, he's got a decent touch there, but the frame and the weight are real problems. It's just not really a factor for him. He shouldn't be like factored into any paint scoring or defending, like basically at all. He's a perimeter player. And yeah, like, so it's not that he's like failing to convert shots there. He's just not trying. And I think that field goal percentage is just pulled down by that 35% 3-point percentage on 11 freaking attempts a game. But yeah, I think there's a lot to enjoy here. I think that, you know, I wonder why Tyrell Terry is like getting talk in the top 10 or 15 or whatever.
I've come back to Terry a lot when we've looked at these guys.
And why isn't Joe then? I mean, there's some
factors. Well, there's a lot more playmaking with Terry.
There's a lot more, but like, it's, to me, I've just never, like, you know, Terry is like, I'm going to look at Tyrell Terry's numbers real quick, because just there are like some flashes, and I obviously, like, Joe is just chucking the ball. Like, I mean, if he can pass, we don't even really know.
Like, yeah, there were some poor shots, but like, it's Arkansas, and he's clearly the best player they're working with there. And yeah, I mean, he had a reason to be chucking. He's a ridiculous shooter.
Like, I just never have bought Terry as an amazing playmaker. Like, he had basically as many turnovers as assists. Like, he's like 3-3. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I've never bought into that. I understand, like, oh, he's a point guard, so he makes some good passes, especially on tape. I don't know. Like, I think if, say you make that leap for Terry and say, okay, well, he can be a good passer. Why can't you make the leap for Joe and say, well, he can be a wing defender, and then you've got a 3-and-D, like an elite 3-and-D player?
Personally, like, I think that you can, but I'm talking about both of them as like late first rounders if you're buying that. You know, like, I'm not Kevin O'Connor level with Terry.
Yeah. Fair enough. And I think Terry is significantly younger. Just gonna double check that. Okay, so it's about a year difference there. A year difference there in age. So there's perhaps a little more upside in Terry, but I like the size, at least. Like, Joe, he's got, like, you know, he obviously needs to work on his frame, but he's got an NBA size. And that's like a big place where I've doubted Terry in the past.
Yeah. I have a comp for Joe that I feel pretty good about.
Let's hear it.
I got Landry Shamet.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, Shamet, the college numbers, he was weighed 6'4", 179. Isaiah Joe, 6'5", 180. And yeah, senior season at Wichita State for Shamit was 44% from three, with, yeah, a little bit better from the field, I guess. But yeah, I mean, six attempts, 40%. I think that they're both going to come in and be pretty good shooters. Joe weirdly has like some concerns shooting off movement. It, like, his numbers just surprisingly weren't good there, but I'm not really concerned about it. But I think, you know, there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve when it comes to putting on weight. And I think, you know, Jackson Frank did a really good piece on Isaiah Joe that I would encourage people to subscribe to his Patreon and check that out. But, you know, showed how like Joe put on a good, what, 13 pounds, something like that, between his freshman and sophomore season. So say Joe got to a team like Milwaukee that has a really good prior history with strength and conditioning for some of these guys, that, you know, maybe if that was the case, I think there's a little bit of a learning curve. If he can put on some weight, that would be the case of him becoming a good defender. But right now, that he's going to have some issues there, similarly to Shamit.
Yeah, I really like that comp. I like where we've come down on Joe. Is he's kind of a dice roll. The one other thing we got to mention is he did end his season with injury. He had surgery to his knee to clean it out, I believe it is. I don't know why I'm
phrasing like that. You're also reminding me, Desmond Bane, 4 years at TCU, didn't miss a single game.
There you go. Regular Buddy Hield. But yeah, I think like there was some discussion of him pulling out of the draft and then maybe going back in because of uncertainty of the season being played or how it's going to be played or whatever. And it's a weak draft, so might as well jump in. But I think there's a chance that he would have preferred to stay away, maybe come back fully healthy, you know, and kind of flash as one of these like elite shooters and get into the first round.
Right. One more year of 40% from three would probably do numbers for him.
I mean, if he even took made some better choices on what shots he's taking and not taking, maybe he drops his attempts to like 8 per game and he hits like 39%, then you're looking at like a late first rounder. I don't quite have him there. I do have him in my second round. Where did you come down on Joe?
I think that a team in the late first could get convinced into taking him. And again, I got to more concretely lay out my tiers, but yeah, I'm probably right towards the end of the first round that I'm working with here. Yeah, it's right now I got a pretty big tier, so I got to get a little more concrete, but I'm right towards very end of the first, or very end of the first and beginning of the second.
Gotcha. Yeah, well, I think that these are the three guys that have been getting love in the first that we haven't covered. I know I've said that before, but I feel very, we've done 39 guys now. I feel very sure that I've got my top 30.
Okay. Yeah, like I said, I'll definitely lay mine out more and feel more confident for the next episode we got here. That's what I'm working on right now.
I'll also just kind of mention to kind of quickly touch on what I did to kind of cement my top 30 and get your take on this. I just dropped everyone, all the centers that I am unsure about, I just dropped them out of the first. And now I got a huge batch of five centers, my first five picks in the second round. And not a mock draft, but like, center is just such an overpopulated position and the value has dropped so far that I have...
Is Precious a part of this?
Yeah, I have Precious. I have Isaiah Stewart, Precious Achiuwa, Xavier Tillman, Daniel Arturo, and Zeke Nnaji. They're just at the top of my second round. Don't spend a first pick on a big man that's like very questionable. Yeah. I just the guys I have ahead of him. I know you don't have your board ironed out, but I think there's 30 guys that the last two inclusions, and this was, you know, on my like original grades, I had Robert Woodard and Tyler Bay a little bit lower than most of those guys or all those guys. But I was like, listen, at the end of the day, like a big forward, like a big wing, it's just more valuable. Take the swing on Woodard or Bay, because just you can replace a center if you don't. I mean, you could just take Woodard at 29 or 30 and just sign, you know, a scrap heap center, and I think you're fine.
Yeah, that's interesting. I see where you're coming from. And like, we, there's going to be a Draft Crush piece coming out for King's Herald, and I claimed a Kongwu. And then the more I started watching it, I'm like, I'm with you. Like, I just find myself keep lowering him, where I really like a Kongwu as a player, but just the value of centers is at a terrible spot in the league right now.
I'm totally with you. And that's why he's like at the bottom of my top 10. I love him, but he can't shoot. He's not special. He's a really, really good traditional center, you know, defensive center. But I don't know. I don't know. The upside is just so limited from a non like offensively versatile center. Anyway, we can get into our specific rankings further on, but I will say we've done 39. There are 64 guys that I want to talk about. Okay. I know that's a lot. That's 25 guys left. I want to do 5 more episodes with you with 5 guys each. And like, wow, really get like, you know, we don't need to talk for more than 5 minutes on, you know, whatever, Jordan Nwora. But just to get, I want a top 60 when we go into this draft in less than a month now.
I like it. So I kind of want to get to Sam Merrill here because I think he's
on my list.
Okay. And yeah, I mean, do we want to try to lay out?
You're going to hot take 25-year-old Sam Merrill in
right,
the first round.
Right. It's totally my guy. okay, so do we want to do like similarly sized guys? Should we try and lay out the next 5 right now?
Sure, that sounds good. I'll just read off the names of the guys that I want to do, the next 25. Super fast here. Last names only. Ramsey, Reed, Carey Jr., Pritchard, Stanley, Hughes, Mays, Azubuike, Tile, Nwora, Ndoye, Quickly, Perry, Merrill, Howard, Madar, Haggins, Jones, Diane, Wesson, Alexander, Hinton, Marshall, Scrub, and Powell.
Okay, so 3 I have listed here. Tell me if you're cool with this and who else to add. Sam Merrill, Cassius Stanley, and Jordan Nwora. Are you okay with those 3 and adding 2 more to it?
You're kind of going wings here?
Yeah, that's what I was looking at.
Put Hughes in there, Elijah Hughes.
Okay, and then Jamias Ramsey?
Maybe. How about Najee Marshall?
Okay.
Okay. Those are like our 6'6 to 6'8 guys.
Yeah. Najee Marshall, and then who was the other one? Hughes?
Yeah, Elijah Hughes.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm all for this. Yeah, I am. What are we like? I think we're like a month out from the draft, roughly.
Less than a month, man.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I'm got to tell you, I'm never going to have been as excited as I'm going to be for this upcoming draft.
Absolutely.
How much I know the guys.
Absolutely. Super excited about it. Yeah, man. We'll just crush through these and we'll do another mock draft with Bryant and Nate if possible. And we'll do a little trade talk, maybe some draft night trade previews, do some hypotheticals there and any other news that comes across. But for now, I think that's about it, man.
There we go. Well, I guess that's going to do it for this episode. Like you said, we're going to keep covering the draft here with not all too much time left. Diving into, you know, Sacramento's got a plethora of second rounders to work with. So definitely relevant conversation here. And the guys at the King's Herald will continue putting out content there as well. I might be putting out some draft profiles there at some point as well. Definitely go subscribe to their Patreon to support independent Sacramento Kings coverage. And if you enjoy this episode of the Kings Pulse podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review, and you'll hear from us again in the next couple of days here.